In last week's gospel lesson, we heard that familiar story of Jesus and the feeding of the 5,000, and today's text picks up right after the conclusion of that story. For immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, Jesus came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." This is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Doesn't the story open on a strange note? Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. It's strange for a couple of reasons. First, what's the rush? Jesus has just gotten finished feeding a multitude of 5,000 men, not counting the women and children who were undoubtedly present, feeding them with 5 loaves of bread and 2 little fish. And suddenly Jesus is hustling everyone out of there, starting with his own disciples. After such a scene, you might think that Jesus might be content to enjoy the applause, to take a bow, maybe even do an encore. It is pretty miraculous after all, but that is probably precisely why Jesus wanted everyone out of there. He didn't want there to be any misunderstanding. He wasn't a carnival magician come to do some pretty neat tricks. Neither was he a divine non-governmental aid organization come to deliver prepackaged meals and bottled water in times of natural disaster. Instead, Jesus had come to proclaim the kingdom of God in word and deed. And the theatrics of a miraculous feeding were going to get his endeavor entirely off track. And two, there was that danger that other gospels note, that this crowd, realizing what they had on hand, might take him and make him king. But of course, Jesus was already king. He didn't need the crowd to make him that. Now, the second strange thing about this introduction is that Jesus didn't just put the disciples in the boat, he forced them into it. Sort of the same way you and I might push the over-eager visitor who can't stop talking out the door so that you can get on with the rest of your day. Or maybe you're just nicer people than I am and you indulge the over-eager visitor as they continue to talk. I, on the other hand, try to push them out the door. Only once he'd got the disciples in the boat, there was still the matter of the crowd, some 5,000 plus souls that Jesus managed to dismiss single-handedly. Of course, this being church, everybody in the crowd wanted to shake the preacher's hand, and Jesus wasn't going to refuse to do that. So long after he'd started, after he'd shaken all those hands and waved goodbye to the last of the lingerers and finally shoved the last over-eager visitor out the door, Jesus was finally alone. And once he was alone, Jesus could climb that mountain he'd intended to climb. He climbed the mountain not because it's there, as George Mallory famously explained about his wanting to climb Mount Everest, but because Jesus wanted to pray. And the mountain was the place par excellence where one went to pray, because it was on the mountain that one expected to encounter and be at one with God. Abraham had done it. Moses had done it. Elijah had done it. Countless numbers of men and women had always gone to the mountain in order to talk with God. And Jesus was no different in that respect. And Jesus, like these numberless others, went to be alone. I think that's why Jesus had to dismiss the crowds and force his disciples into the boat, so that at last he could be alone with God, undistracted and uninterrupted by the ceaseless demands of hungry crowds and hurting individuals, the blind men and the bleeding women and the dying children who reached out to him day after day for his healing touch. Can you imagine just how tiring it must have been to be Jesus? To be submerged in the relentless wave of human need, expending energy, extending compassion day after day after day. Matthew doesn't explain why Jesus went to the mountain to pray, but I have to wonder whether Jesus simply wasn't tired of being Jesus. I have to wonder if maybe Jesus hadn't got to that point in his own ministry where he felt he couldn't preach another sermon, or he couldn't teach another lesson, or he couldn't counsel another person or heal another victim. Maybe, just maybe, Jesus had run out of both patience and perseverance. Or maybe the knowledge that the poor will always be with us and that there will always be wars and rumors of wars weigh down his spirit. Maybe it had simply taken everything he had to feed that crowd of 5,000. But whatever it was time to pray. And when evening came, Jesus was there on top of that mountain doing what he had gone there to do. But you'll remember that Jesus had put those disciples into the boat, and by this time, by the time evening had come, the boat into which Jesus had forced those disciples found itself in trouble. Usually the Sea of Galilee is as calm can be. It certainly was the morning a group from church went in a little boat and sailed on it, and I would guess that it was just as calm when Jesus put the disciples into the boat. But as the tour guides in Israel will tell you, storms can come up on that inland sea just as quick as can be, especially if the wind blows in off the hills to the east, hills that rise some 2,000 feet above the lake shore. Maybe it was one of those winds whipping down from the Golan Heights, but its effect was fearsome. The wind blew against the boat, causing waves to crash around it. Indeed, Matthew tells us, the sea was so violent that the boat was taking a beating, being beaten and pushed around by the waves. It's a raging, storming, bullying sea on which the disciples now find themselves adrift. And in that, the sea was just doing what the sea always does in Hebrew literature. It represents a threat to human life. Whether it's a hurricane or a flood or a tsunami, water is a representative of all the evil powers which oppress and resist the salvation intended for God's people. Just as important, indeed, as necessary as water is, water in Hebraic literature always represents a threat to human life and to the salvation that God intends for God's people. And so as I picture those disciples out on the perilous sea, I can't help but picture other disciples. Indeed, disciples in modern-day Iraq, adrift in the tiny, fragile boat that is the church in that country, on a raging, violent, bullying sea of Islamic fundamentalist terrorism. I think of Christian disciples forced to flee their homes under threat of forced conversion or exorbitant taxes or even death. I think of Canon Andrew White, the vicar of Baghdad, who yesterday reported that the five-year-old son of a founding member of the church in Baghdad was cut in half during an attack by the Islamic State on the Christian town of Karakash. Little Andrew, who was named for the priest, is but one of thousands of Christians brutally killed by being shot or hanged or beheaded by a demented group of people who distort the teachings of a great Abrahamic faith. I think of Christians, once numbering some 1.5 million in Iraq, their number now reduced to less than 200,000. And I know that they are adrift on a perilous sea. And so if you're like me, you wonder, where is Jesus? Don't you think his disciples must have wondered that as the storm raged and the waves battered their boat? It's true that they hadn't been much help when Jesus fed the crowd of 5,000. Remember, he had asked them, why don't you feed them? And they said, but that's not our job. Why don't they go into town and find food for themselves? So sure, they weren't much help, but surely they didn't deserve to get forced into a boat and wind up alone in the middle of a storm. At least during their previous storm at sea, Jesus had had the decency, the courtesy to be in the boat with them. Now they're on their own. And I'm guessing that they had little idea of what to do. After all, only 4 of the 12 of them were fishermen. Otherwise, you had, one tax collector, one corporate treasurer, one political activist, one professor of philosophy, and as for the rest, well, who knows what they did professionally. In other words, only 1/3 of the crew knew what to do, how to handle a boat in a storm, which may not actually be a bad statistic, given that these disciples were fighting for their lives on that raging sea, the symbol of chaos and potential destruction that lies so close at hand. But then, early in the morning, sometime between 3 and 6, to be exact, Jesus came walking toward them on that same sea. Some folks want to know how it was that Jesus walked on the water. An interesting question, I suppose, but I'm much more interested in the question, how did Jesus know that his disciples were in trouble? How did Jesus know to come to them? No one had cell phones in those days, of course, and even if they did, they probably couldn't get service or a signal out on the lake. There's no sign of any other boats. There's no radio, no Coast Guard cutters patrolling the waters. But that doesn't mean that no one knew they were out there and were in trouble. Remember that Jesus had been praying. And that's, I think, how he knew that he was needed. Jesus, recall, had gone to God with his own needs for rest, for restoration, for replenishment and refreshment. And Jesus came away from his time of prayer aware of the needs of others. Jesus' time in prayer had made him one with God, as our own prayers will do. And the assurance of the scriptures is that God knows our own needs even before we ask or articulate them. Aware that his disciples were lost, aware that they were tired, aware that they were on the verge of giving up hope, Jesus came walking toward them on the sea. Jesus came walking after midnight, walking in the darkest, deadest part of the night, walking in the pitchest black when you can't even see your hand in front of your face, when in the depth of your soul you might be afraid that this is it, that this is how it all ends, when you might question if God cares or even if God is there. But Jesus came walking after midnight. Jesus walked down the mountain and through town and across the shore and over the waters. Jesus came to be with the people who needed him. He came walking after midnight. He didn't come at the first sign of trouble. He didn't come before the storm started or the wind blew and the waves began to beat up the boat. Jesus came after the disciples had battled the elements, after they had struggled to establish a bearing and to steer away from the rocky shoreline, after their strength and their resources were depleted. Jesus came walking after midnight, after the people who had traveled and eaten with him, listened to and learned from him, after they were on the verge of giving up hope. Now, curiously, the disciples hadn't been afraid up to this point. Despite the wind and the waves, despite the darkness and the despair, it's only when the disciples see Jesus walking toward them that they're terrified. Which may seem strange, but that's where the story started, on a strange note. I think the disciples are afraid because they know that it is only the God of Israel who tramples on the waves and walks in the recesses of the deep. These are very specific signs of God's sovereign and transcendent power over all that would threaten and thwart God's purposes. The disciples are afraid because they know that only the God of Israel, who created the winds and the waves and the seas and the oceans, can walk upon them. The disciples are afraid because they know that only God, who made them, has the power to conquer them. When all seemed lost, when the waves of life were literally crashing over them, threatening to destroy them, God in Christ came walking to them on the seas. Jesus came walking after midnight then, and he comes walking now. Jesus comes when we feel afraid and alone. Jesus comes when we've struggled to stay afloat on life's stormy seas. Jesus comes to us when our strength and our hope are almost gone. And Jesus treads underfoot the waves of fear that threaten to engulf us. Jesus comes walking on the water and stands before us and says, "It is I. I am here. Do not be afraid." And in confidence, we can turn and say, "Truly, you are the Son of God.